If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our episodes via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for select podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code DAILYBLAST to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code DAILYBLAST. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, March 23rd, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
This is the Daily Blast from the New Republic, produced and presented by the DSR Network. I'm your host, Greg Sargent. Donald Trump just announced that he's likely to campaign for the presidency on a promise of a 15-week abortion ban. This striking news comes as political commentators are wondering whether abortion rights will be as salient in this fall's elections as they were in 2022, with some predicting that the issue is likely to fade. We have an interesting test of this looming in deep red Alabama. Marilyn Lanz is running for a state house seat in a special election set for March 26th, next Tuesday. And Lanz is campaigning directly on her own personal abortion story, having been forced to end her pregnancy after learning that the fetus had terrible problems. And Alabama just made national news after its Supreme Court handed down a ruling with vast implications for the future of in vitro fertilization treatments. So we invited Marilyn on the show to ask what she's seeing on the ground. Welcome, Marilyn.
Thank you, Greg. Happy to be here.
So can you tell us your story?
Yes, I'd be happy to share that. I had the privilege of meeting a young woman, Alyssa Gonzalez, who recently shared her story with the abortion ban and having to travel to D.C. because she wasn't able to get the care she needed at home. She's also from Alabama, and she is a brave and fierce woman. It brought back a lot of memories for me because I, too, have a similar story. And there's many parallels between Alyssa's story and mine. We both were to have second sons, little brothers for the boys we already had. And we both had a genetic defect called trisomy. And we both were told our pregnancies were non-viable. And both were told our lives were at risk. It was a tragic and it was a time, you know, of great joy that then went south really fast for both of us. And hard, hard decisions have to be made. They're decisions nobody should ever have to make. And yet the difference in our stories is that 20 years ago, I was able to get the care I needed. My three doctors told me that this is the procedure I needed, that my life was at risk. I was able to go to my own hospital with my own doctor there. I didn't have to leave my community. And to think that we've gone 20 years backwards, I can't believe that. I've seen in my lifetime women make great strides in many areas. And I'm outraged that 20 years later, women do not have the same freedoms and protections that I had. And I'm grateful for Alyssa to sharing her story in my commercials for my campaign and to coming to Huntsville and speaking out. And I am grateful that it has also inspired other women to tell their stories and that it's opening up this dialogue, I think, for people. And that's always a healthy thing.
And you had a lot of support when you went through this. And I gather that you encountered Alyssa and other women who are in a very different situation now. And that's partly what compelled you to run for office, right?
Well, it's what compelled me to make it sort of the heart of the campaign. I had run for office in 2022 And it wasn't really an issue in that campaign. We were structured around healthcare, education, and economic well-being. And I came very close to winning. In fact, I was closest to flipping a House seat in the entire state. And my opponent, the man who beat me, ended up resigning after he pled guilty to felony voter fraud charges. And so this seat became available. During the campaign in 2022, though, that's when Roe versus Wade was overturned, the Dobbs decision and all of that. And so then it became part of our campaign. And in this campaign, we knew it was going to be the big issue. It's really resonating down here with women, and even more so since the IVF decision. And I think the decision about it, around it, was whether or not to share my story. And I felt very strongly at that point that the way things had lined up with the similarities and then the huge difference between my story and Alyssa's, that was a story that needed to be told.
And in Alabama, it seems that this is going to be really top of mind for a lot of people right now, because the state Supreme Court just handed down that ruling that threatened IVF. Of course, the governor and state legislature just passed something protecting IVF treatments. I wonder if that actually ends up sending a misleading message. The state is still an extreme anti-choice stronghold, right? So when you campaign on this issue, what are you saying to voters about it?
Well, with the IVF and what was passed, I think, is far short of what we need. Our Mobile clinic has still not resumed services because they are concerned about the legality still moving forward. We're concerned about the slippery slope we're on. Anthony Daniels, minority leader, has put forth some legislation, the Alabama Right to Contraception Act. So women's freedoms are on the line here, and we're making that front and center, and it's resonating. I talked with a man today, and when he looked at my card and he pointed to that, at about 65 years old, I think, and he said, "You've got to win. You've got to win for all the women and for all the mamas."
And what about your opponent? Is this something you can really get your opponent drawn out on? How is that playing?
I think all he has said to date is that he believes that what the legislature did to protect IVF was sufficient, and that it's really not going to be an issue going forward. I, of course, disagree with that.
Right. And so you're still going to be in a minority even if you win. So what do you tell voters? Like, well, how do you make this issue matter to them in the context of your campaign?
I think it matters to them. There is such a different energy in the campaign this time. I have women hug me. I have people come up and shake my hand and tell me how proud they are to vote for me. When, you know, I'm just out in public. I just think it's really resonating with people, especially in this district. And this district does tend to be a bit not like the rest of Alabama.
So let's talk a bit about your district. President Biden got almost exactly half the vote there in 2020. It's a real swing district. It's Huntsville and Madison with a lot of educated suburbanites, and it's pretty diverse as well, right?
That's exactly right. And it is also the city of Triana, it's Redstone Arsenal, and it's some unincorporated parts of the county here. So it's a very diverse district. It is a well-educated district. We have so many people moving into these communities from all over the country, from around the world even, and a lot of blue people coming in, a lot of purple people coming in. I think that they say the district is trending purple, but I think it's blue. I think if my 2022 election, if it had been 2020, I think we would have won. But in 2022, we just didn't have much at the top of the ticket. So I think our voters just weren't motivated to come out the way Katie Britt's folks were in that cycle. So I think, and this being a special, you never know with a special. Turnout tends to be really low, but there are a lot of people that are motivated by this issue in particular that I think are going to get out and vote on Tuesday.
I want to ask about this. There's a sort of theory of the case out there that the 2022 elections, which Democrats won largely on abortion, and the string of special election victories they've racked up in 2023, aren't really that predictive of 2024. The thought is that general elections, presidential elections in particular, have a lot of lower propensity voters who don't care as much about the issue as educated, highly motivated partisans in midterm and special elections do. Do you encounter some of these less motivated voters? I'm talking about younger people, maybe less educated, not sort of sporadic voters. Do you encounter them? What are they saying about the issue?
I've encountered a few people like that. In fact, I had one today, and it's like they're just opting out of the process altogether. They're done. They say, I'm just not talking politics anymore. I'm over it. And so it doesn't seem to get any traction. I can tell you that when I talk to Republicans, and I do talk to Republicans, that there are many Republicans who talk about the realities of their daughters and granddaughters and their concern for them. And we have a lot of people in this district in particular that are what my good Republican friend, and I have many, says they consider themselves traditional Republicans. And I think those people are a lot more motivated by being able to make changes and overturn that abortion ban.
Are the voters you encounter aware of why Roe v. Wade was overturned? I've heard some political operatives lament that Trump sort of codes as moderate on the issue for a lot of voters, which is absurd because he pointed the justices that helped strike down Roe.
Right.
Do voters have a clear sense of what happened? Do they know why Roe was struck down? What do you encounter there?
I think so. I think in this district, yes, I think that they do. And I was just thinking of a story. A couple days ago, I delivered a T-shirt to a woman who one of our volunteers, one of our canvassers, had knocked her door. She's a 61-year-old Black woman, and she said that she went out and registered to vote for the first time. She's never voted in her life, but she registered and is going to vote for me Tuesday, and so they wanted me to go by and pay her a personal visit and take her a T-shirt. So that was a special moment.
Did she say why she registered?
Because of the abortion issue.
That's amazing. Yeah, I wonder how widespread that is. I mean, so do voters believe that a Trump presidency and a Republican Congress would implement a national abortion ban at, I guess, 15 weeks, if Trump is to be believed, which he probably isn't? Are they aware of that? The reason I ask is that in the New York special election recently, the one in a district similar to yours, suburban, pretty educated, they had to just pound that message into people's head, what a Trump presidency and a Republican Congress would do. I understand that you're running for a state slot, but do voters understand that there's actually a looming possibility of a national ban?
I would say in this district, probably yes. I would also say that while there are a lot of people here who don't like either of the nominees, there are a lot of people that I hear saying that they understand a no vote or a write-in vote is, in effect, a vote for Trump.
Right. And do they understand that that an abortion ban, a national abortion ban, is on the agenda?
I think so. And I haven't had that many conversations around that particular thing. But the people that do talk about abortion, and it is the majority of people that I talk with these days, they're afraid. So they may not really, it may not be on their radar, but they're afraid of these freedoms continuing to be eroded.
There is sort of an overarching message here that Democrats have used lately that fuses protecting abortion rights with defending democracy, and the frame is freedom, right?
Yeah.
Republicans have used all these tactics like stealing Supreme Court seats and gerrymandering to entrench themselves in power, kind of anti-democratically in some ways, and now they're using it to take away the rights of an enormous swath of the population, especially in some of these reactionary state legislatures. Are you able to use your personal story to viscerally connect with people on this front?
I think that, you know, the word freedom has been co-opted today. And if you don't have freedom over your own body, if your family doesn't have the freedom to build their family in the way they want. I don't know what freedom is.
So when you talk about your own story, do you find that you really connect emotionally with voters? I'm trying to understand how that feels and what sort of reaction you're getting from voters when they hear that story.
One of the amazing things is that I have then heard so many other stories. So women have opened up to me about their own experiences with miscarriage and ectopic pregnancies and things that happened in the past and their concern about if that had happened in the here and now. And even I have talked to a couple women who had miscarriages that weren't they weren't allowed to have a DNC. Their doctor wouldn't perform that, which is normally routine procedure after a miscarriage. And I've heard from families with fertility issues. So it's a kind of a very emotional sharing and a deepening of relationship when you talk at that level, you know, woman to woman about such tragic experiences. And there's still grief around it and probably always will be.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see how that turns out on Tuesday. Marilyn Lenz, thanks so much for coming on with us today.
Thank you so much. I've enjoyed being on the show.
Folks, don't miss two new pieces up at TNR.com. Anna Marie Cox on the struggle for control of the increasingly fringe Texas Republican Party, and Jordan Michael Smith on the international axis of autocrats who will be empowered by another Trump presidency. We'll see you all tomorrow.
You've been listening to The Daily Blast with me, your host, Greg Sargent. The Daily Blast is a New Republic podcast and is produced by Riley Fessler and the DSR Network.